Hello, everyone, and welcome to Frankenstein's Podcast, where it's all about the monster. We are a creature feature podcast about monsters and why we love them. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Praska, and with me is...
your other host, Khalid Hussein.
What's up, Khalid?
Hey, it ain't nothing but a thing. I'm chilling.
Oh. That was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just jazzing it up, man. I got a case of the Sundays about to be Mondays.
Yeah, been there.
Yeah, it was just a fun weekend for me, you know, like got to go hiking and did a little bit of writing and, oh, you know, just had a real nice, relaxing weekend overall. And now I'm just like, you know, got to get back to the real world, got to get back to work, the errand carters, if you will.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's Aaron?
Yeah, that was the joke I was making.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. Nice job.
This is so fun. How are you, Joe?
We're on the same wavelength.
That's exactly the takeaway from that exchange.
It should be. No, I'm doing pretty good. It was nice weather here, but it's fall, so I've been doing a lot of raking. That's been kind of the definition of this today.
So. Yeah, you sent me a really cute picture earlier of the like leaves and everything. That was adorbs.
Yeah, super adorbs, if you will. Yeah, I like that. But
for listeners at home, that I am confirming that Joe sends me cute autumnal pictures. That's just, add that to the Frankenstein's podcast lore.
Yeah, autumnal. I like that too.
Oh yeah, dude. I've been throwing autumnal around for a couple of years now. When I tell you, like, it just distinguishes me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so distinguished.
I find you to be more distinguished now than I ever have.
Yeah, because I dropped autumnal on you out of nowhere.
Yeah. And speaking of dropping things, Khalid.
Sure.
I got a question I want to drop on you.
Okay, that was not bad. Yeah. All things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Right, I don't want to take light away from it by ruining a perfectly good segue. Mm-hmm. So what's the joke you want to drop?
I didn't say joke.
Oh, what did you just say?
I said question.
Oh, okay. Is it going to be a joke?
You'll have to find out.
All right. Hit me.
What do you call an alien with muscles?
So it is going to be a joke. Okay. I feel like you could have just been up front. What do I call an alien with muscles? Mm-hmm. I got nothing. This one's, I'm going to be mad.
A flextraterrestrial.
Okay, so I'm mad for a different reason. That was awful. That was terrible.
Oh, and that's a segue, Khalid. What are we talking about tonight?
Well, thanks for asking, Joe. Today we are talking about the 2023 Brian Duffield film, No One Will Save You. I've got a little description from our little synopsis from our homeboy Google, and it goes a little something like this. Bryn finds solace within the walls of the home where she grew up until she's awakened one night by strange noises from unearthly intruders.
Boom.
Boom.
What a monster.
They're creatures of the abstract that live off potential energy.
It's alive!
That was a short and sweet one.
Very succinct. I feel like they're starting to like let AI make these descriptions or something. You know, the newer movies feel very half-assed.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's okay. Before we, Khalid, you got me distracted so much. Before we get into the movie, I know you just did the synopsis, but we forgot to do a little bit of housekeeping.
We forgot?
Yeah, we particularly, the emphasis on the we is the you, Khalid, but that's okay.
Okay, fair enough. This is definitely a me problem. Go on.
Yeah, we forgot to thank our newest patron, by the way.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we got a new patron, our buddy and loyal Frankenstein, Jake Cole. Just wanted to give him a nice shout out on the podcast before we dig into the movie in question and say thank you, Jake, for joining us on the Patreon.
Much appreciated, Jake. And for those of you who haven't yet, please just consider checking out the Patreon and becoming patrons. We will be dropping little extra content for folks on there, stretching our little creative muscles and seeing what this little podcast is capable of. But yeah, thank you again, Jake. It really just means a lot. Goes a long way to just making us not go insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You are saving us from the brink of insanity if you donate to the Patreon. That is the truth.
You are instrumental, yeah. One might say.
Literally, yeah. Couldn't do it without you.
True. I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean,
speaking of people going insane,
yeah.
What did you think of this movie?
Oh, wild. I'm the first one to give my thoughts this time. It's always you, Khalid.
I know. I wanted to do the segue because I never really do those. And I'm letting you start off with your thoughts.
Cool. So I was very excited about this movie. I think I hyped it up like over a year ago when I first like heard that this was being made. I don't know if you remember me sending you like things about this, but I'm like a Brian Duffield fan. We've done two of his movies on the podcast. This is his directorial debut, but we did Underwater, the one with Kristen Stewart. We did Love and Monsters. He wrote both of those films. I also really love his movie Spontaneous, which I believe you've seen too, Khalid, right?
Yeah, I liked Spontaneous. That was I think I recommended that to you.
I think you did too. So he did those three, which I honestly I think are all bangers. But so when I found out that he was making like an alien creature feature, writing and directing it, I was super pumped. And honestly, I will say I was not disappointed. I was excited. I think there, you know, are a few things like with any movie that you could like pick at, but I really had a good time with it. I think that it was we'll get into it, but it was an interesting choice to make the majority of the film like dialogue free. I have some thoughts about that, but it's just an interesting thing. It's like, it's going to inevitably draw comparisons with like something like A Quiet Place. But like, I did see that this movie kind of feels in some sense like a progression in like an alien invasion type movie from like something like A Quiet Place or even Signs for that matter, where like, you're in this confined like rural location and you're getting attacked by aliens, but it's something that's going on in the broader world. But whereas those movies both have like, you know, those weird little like things where like, oh, the aliens can't do sound or, oh, the aliens can't do water, right? Like this doesn't have that. So it almost one-ups those movies in a certain way and in a way that I kind of appreciate. Like it has this little gimmick, but like that gimmick isn't something I'm really going to poke holes. It's going to poke holes in like the way the aliens work, you know? So I don't know. I really liked it. It's fresh. It felt fresh. It felt fun. I think that Caitlin Dever, the actor, did a phenomenal job. Great performance. I just really enjoyed it overall. I don't know. What do you think?
Great points, Joe. I didn't realize it was a director of Spontaneous, and I also didn't realize that the director of Spontaneous was the director of Underwater. So I have
not director, writer. This is his first time directing. He wrote all those movies.
Okay, so like I didn't realize that I was already like a fan of this person as a writer, and so I think their first at bat with directing was a very, very well done effort. Like, I just want to start off by saying that because like, I think that like taken as a whole, I might have like a negative review of this and I don't want it to come off that way because like one, I didn't even realize that was the same writer or whatever, but like that makes a lot of sense in retrospect because like this feels like really expertly written high concept, like fiction. And I think that like, it's very like applaudable on that level of like, a lot of people wouldn't even attempt like what he did with this movie, let alone like be as successful, you know, like, and it's like really a testament to the like experiment here that he did with like the like almost no dialogue type story that is like, you know, it's the kind of thing where like a lot of movies in the past have like done something like this, you know. I think the most like obvious comparison is Signs, M. Night Shyamalan's Signs. And it's like, try to imagine that movie, but like nobody explains it. Like, that's insane, you know? Like you could do it and it would be like powerful, but so much of like Signs for me at least is like, you know, stuff like Mel Gibson's wife's like final words, you know, like the swing away. Like these are iconic things that like you couldn't do without dialogue. And mm-hmm. this movie foregoes all of that in effort to try to like get like something akin to that out of like a story where like dialogue is like not as big of a factor. And I really applaud that, because like that's still writing. That's, if anything, that's more writing, and that's really, really tough to do. And I think like it like 85% succeeded in that regard. For me, that 15% is just like too hard to overcome. And I, as much as I enjoyed watching it and like the experiment of it, I found it really hard to sink my teeth into. And a lot of the third act hinges on like just like plotty stuff that you kind of have to parse for yourself. And I think that's like a, for what the movie is trying to say with that third act, it is. Oh, and we'll get into it, but like that is a wild, like kind of like very ambiguous, even though they showed us everything ending, you know? And I'm just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to take from it. And I'm very excited to hear what your thoughts are on it. But like, it might be the kind of thing where like you shed light on it in a way that makes me like completely change on that last 15%. But like, as of right now, I would say it was a worthwhile like experiment. And Caitlin Dever, like you said, just really killed it. Like very, very wise casting with her as the lead. Like it's such a performance heavy thing, and a lot of actors might take it as like, oh, no lines, it's gonna be easy. But like she really, really like finds like the nuance in that performance even without dialogue. And her physical performance is, we'll talk about that too, but that is so captivating. And yeah, like it was downright spooky at times, and just like a really great creature feature at the end of the day. And those are my initial thoughts. Usually at this point, I would ask what you think.
Right. Yeah. Out of order, but no, I see what you're saying. I think, I think I'm like more on the side of like, I'm going to land on the side of like it being a good movie overall. Just, I mean, I do think it's just like I said, I think I said the word fresh, like it feels like a really fresh concept, something that's super unique. And as just like an endeavor, like very like creative, and he like worked really hard to do this kind of cool thing. And I think it succeeds overall. The dialogue free element, I read was not even intentional originally. Like it sounds like he was writing the script and like got about like halfway through and realized that he didn't really have any dialogue yet. And he's like, well, I wonder if I could just keep rolling with this. And he did. And I think even on set, like Caitlin Dever, like he said, if you feel like this calls for dialogue, you can add that in yourself. And she even kind of went with it and was like, no, I think we should stick with the idea of like trying to make this work. So it's an interesting like challenge, I think, that all of them were trying to like overcome or trying to work with and see if they could find success from it. And I think that maybe where we differ is like if we felt like they actually found that success in the end. But there is a really core like emotional crux to this that I think that the lack of dialogue could be challenging to overcome, I think. And so like I guess we're spoiling the movie for anyone who doesn't know. Like we'll spoil the movie on the podcast, but go watch it on Hulu. It's great. If you ask me, maybe not Khalid, but
again, I said I'm 85% of the way there. Yeah. It's successful. Yeah. Like that's a B, but like, yeah. I feel like I'm like an English teacher. That's like, you could have gotten an A. Like that's the energy I'm coming to this with. Not yeah, like you, this is dog shit.
You are that guy. But I was going to say, okay, so the spoilers, like the kind of the emotional crux of it, that is she has felt, our main character Bryn has felt ostracized, alienated from like the entire community, because when she was a child, she accidentally, out of anger, kills her best friend Maud and has to live with that.
No, don't just gloss over it. She what? Brains her with a rock, like
yeah.
Cain and Abel shit.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Very like.
Yeah.
I feel like I thought I knew where it was going for like the whole scene. And I thought it was going to be like, for 2 seconds, I thought Bryn was Maud. And I was like, oh yeah. So Bryn pushes her and she falls and dies. No,
yeah.
That was Bryn that fell. And then she found a rock and in her rage, brains her best friend and is surprised it kills her.
Yeah. So anyway, she's dealing with that basically. Yeah. That's the point. And, basically like her mom dies too. And so she lives alone in this house in the community. Like she doesn't the dad of the friend was the police chief, so she can't really like rely on the police. Well, I mean, that's where the title comes from, the no one will save you. Like she, which I actually thought, so okay, now I'm jumping around.
Right,
I'm jumping
no
around.
One will save you because you brained the police chief's daughter with a rock. Yeah,
it's that.
that's not as catchy of a title.
Yeah, it's that. But like I was kind of thinking, like I was watching it though, like the whole title, like no one will save you. It almost felt like they
unless you did brain the police chief's daughter.
But like I feel like they kind of like they started with points. Like I don't know the writing process for Brian Duffield or anything, but it seems like he started with points of like, if you're alone in this situation, what would you do to try to get out of it? Like car. Go to the police, go to town, go to your neighbors, like all these things, go on a bus to just try to get out of town, like all these things, like he wrote down these things and like, how are those not going to work? And what story elements could we put in place to make sure they do not work for this character? And hence the title. And I was like, okay, like he kind of checks all those boxes, right?
Yeah, but in a really convoluted way that kind of hand waves a very important detail. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. For example, even as you were saying that, I see the holes in it. Like, I would not go to the police precinct of the daughter of the chief whom I killed. Like, I would go to another police station that maybe doesn't have, like, personal animosity towards me and I have to explain aliens are attacking, you know? And it's also just like, the way he describes that, it feels like it's like this foregone conclusion of like, well, I needed to find a way for her not to go to the cops, so obviously I came up with a story where she brains the police chief's daughter. Like, no, there's a million ways.
No, I'm making this up. I don't know if that's a process. I'm making
that up. Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought this was me. Like his quote. Okay.
No, this is me. But like, okay. I mean, I think like, I mean, I do feel like, yeah, you're right. It is convoluted and like silly, but like her car is dead. So like she can only go to the nearby town. And so like she does, she's like, man, I'll try the police. It doesn't work. Then she tries to get on the bus and like ideally, theoretically could be going to another place to find another police precinct, but that's not going to work. So like, I mean, there are pieces in place. Like I feel like for as convoluted as you can make it sound, which it is, as you're saying, he did think of all the stops. You know what I mean?
No one is arguing that he like missed a step here. I am just bringing up the very good point that one of those steps is insane, and it kind of just throws everything you watched and everything that comes after it into such a bizarre light that I can't make sense of. And I feel like part of it is that nobody talks, so I can't even think if I missed something somehow. You know what I mean? Because, like, it really is just the kind of thing where, like, you might not even realize you looked away, but if you did, like, you probably missed something. And it's just, like, I'm really hoping that you could, like, shed light on it. Like, is there something in this movie that makes the ending make more sense?
What part of the ending? Like, the reveal?
Okay, so. All
right, let's get into it, Khalid.
We're getting in.
That's a voice.
I tried to roll with it. We didn't have to. Moving on. I think that my problem with the ending is that, and tell me if I'm missing something here. This is what I want you to clarify for me. Mm-hmm. So basically the third act is like, you finally see that the reason that nobody in town talks to her is that she brained the police chief's daughter with a rock. And that has ostracized her from society, which like, yeah, of course. But then the aliens see that. And this is where I'm lost, because it's like this idea that like, did the aliens pity her and that's why they let her not be assimilated? And so she would rather live with a bunch of like alien abductors and like just like overlords and like live in a fantasy bubble. Like, what is that ending trying to imply to you?
Well, that's a good question. I read some interviews with the director about this and like read a lot of stuff, like articles about his intent here. And ultimately I think the disconnect here is the severity of what she did, right? Like, I think that ultimately the movie and the script is working with the assumption that like the viewer can be like, we're going to forgive her. Right. And I think that's a disconnect for some people. Like, I don't know if you can get over that. I think the point of the ending that it's trying to make is that so he talks about how he wants the aliens to be, he thought up this whole culture and religion for the aliens, and part of them is like they're conquerors, right? And it's, and there's a, the, there's a religion to it, but he also points out that he wanted the aliens to have this like almost anthropological curiosity towards humans. And so part of what they're doing is, okay, this human's like giving us a lot of grief. What's going on here? And they're looking into like what's happening. And so like they kind of dig into her mind, like you see, right? And what we see is her having gone through like shit her entire life and having just like kind of a crappy life, being ostracized, killing her friend, whatever, like living with that. And then like also just dealing with aliens. And then ultimately like having to relive those memories and having to forgive her childhood self. So she like does that and they see that and they're just kind of like, huh, interesting. And I don't know if it's a pity or a forgiveness thing, but I think they're just like, I think we've done enough here in a sense. And she already didn't have any connection to humanity. So they're kind of like, let's just roll with it. You know, like, Brian Duffield says something about how he thinks that it's possible, like people could take it as like, she's almost like an ambassador in a sense, like to humanity.
God, that's so gross.
So I don't know what that is.
I don't want her as an ambassador.
But like, I honestly, like for me, like I thought of it, like at the end, I was like, those are all bug people, right? Like she's dancing with the bug people, like the people with the bugs in their throat. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like to me, it was, she no, has zero connection to humanity anymore. And I was just like, well, fine. I'm happy with, if these people are going to be, if I'm nice to me, like I'm happy with this, you know? And maybe that fits with the morals of it. Like maybe we're not, it's not supposed to sit right with you, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Cause that's a fucked up moral. Like all you can think of is like, basically like, I don't know, like maybe it's just a 2023 of it all, but like, it just feels like this is like a gripe about like people that get canceled or something. And like, oh yeah, when you cancel somebody and like, don't let them like be forgiven, then like they end up like hanging out with monsters and that's how monsters like overpower us and stuff. And I'm just like, that is such a like ass backwards, like victim blamey mentality. Like it, and it just like conveniently absolves her. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, are you upset that no one in town talks to you anymore? Well, maybe you should side with the alien overlords that have like taken over everyone. Like what? I feel like if it was like a redemptive thing and she wound up like saving humanity, like that could have been an interesting turn, but like to just have her just be like, well, no one in this very small town where I did a like infamous and terrible thing is like over it yet. So I guess I'll let Earth get taken over.
I mean, like, could she have stopped them?
I don't know. Did she try?
I kind of think she tried. She killed three of them.
Yeah. Why stop there? You're on a streak. Clearly they're underestimating you. Yeah. And for some ungodly reason, they figured out your life story and decided it needed sympathy. You are their kryptonite. Use that. Like, I want a sequel where she gets to like their White House and blows it up or something. Like,
I mean, who knows? Maybe that's where it's going. I think the canceling metaphor is a bad read, though.
Is it? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know.
Like, this is all, I'm trying to piece my way through it, and I don't like I'm not trying to cleverly have a take on this. It really is just like, I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Like, how are we supposed to feel about it? And not even like, oh, every movie should make you like the protagonist kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But like, does this movie want us to hate the protagonist? Cause even that feels confusing.
It's possible. And I think maybe that's a consequence of the wordless element of it too. Like you said, like that takes a connection away from it, you could say, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean,
I think that the intent there is a redemption piece, but I think like, there's just like, I don't know. I think like the ending is where a lot of people were lost from it. Looking at reviews, like a lot of people were like, I love the movie until the ending. I didn't like the ending. And so like, I don't know. I think the ending was like a big swing that, I mean, you could argue is a miss. I don't know.
Here's the thing. Like for me, it's like at best, it's like trying to say something about like what ostracization can do to a person.
Yeah, you know? That could
and
be
like, and like looking for understanding and finding understanding in unexpected places.
Sure.
You know, like those are valid reads of it. I think worst case scenario, he did a Goosebumps ass ending where it's like, ooh, the invaders did take over. Like, I just, it, and it just feels a little like cheap, I guess is the word I'd use.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I agree with you. I like the sequence of the aliens making her like relive her trauma and like having to like deal with that. I think that the part that kind of loses me, like you said, is the final like little scene where she's like happy and the aliens have taken over. Like, I don't really know how to to contextualize that at all. So like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. And for me, it's like, if the idea is that there's something about her story
mm-hmm.
that like in any way move them to change their mind on what to do about her, I don't think it was like really underscored in the movie for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the only way I can like fix it for me is like that they watched a better movie when they touched her head. Like one that really sold her as like being in any way like significant to them. Cause like all I can think is like, yeah, so she like killed her best friend, fucked up. But like, if you guys are doing this to a lot of people all around the world, you're probably seeing way more interesting stories.
Well, that was actually my thought at the end too. Like, I was like, if that's the inspiration, if like this trauma that like that led her to fight, like, is this inspiration for them? Like, there's got to be like a lot of people who are also going through a similar thing, you know?
Yeah, and then it just like for me at that point, it just like stops holding water at all in that like. And this is the last thing I want to say about it, because like I feel like I'm not really saying anything new here, but like I think like for me, what doesn't hold water is like that they would even bother to like humanize any of these people before doing this, because mm-hmm. like if you're really like psychic and can go all the way back to someone's childhood to find a trauma that like you in any way relate to, mm-hmm. like you're probably like absolving a lot more people than you want to. And it's like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
And so that's the last thing I want to say on it. Do you have anything else you want to say on like the third act, like kind of throwing everything else out of whack?
Not too much. I think that like, I think like ultimately I agree that I think that, like I said, like that piece, that final scene like muddies it up a little bit. I think, coming off the movie, like having watched it, I was really excited. Like, just like, again, like I thought it was a very fresh and like fun movie. Like there's a lot of cool stuff in it. I think that like I had some of those thoughts like in the moment, but I was pushing them aside because I was excited about it. Yeah. You're bringing them a little bit more to light to me. So you're making me think of it a little bit differently, but I still come down positively overall about the movie. I do think it's very possible that you're right about the fact that he's just like, oh, it's a spooky Goosebumps ending, you know, like, oh, it's ambiguous. Like people are going to take what they will from it, you know, like that's possible. And I think that you could make the case that there's like a rookie director mistake, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. And that's fine. Like that's
like
fine.
A more like, veteran director would have like maybe called that out before. Yeah. They got
well,
to
like
that.
If, especially yeah. if he's someone like he's a screenwriter or been like a writer for so long, like somebody yeah. else involved in the production might have been like, we'll change that piece. Right. If he's like writing and directing, like this is his movie, like entirely, which, and it's fine. Like, I'm glad ultimately, like I'm glad that this movie's got made. I'm glad it's there. Cause I think it's really cool and original, flaws and all, but,
no, I'm yeah. happier. The world is better for this movie existing. Like yeah. That is just a fact of like, it's a really great work of art and genre fiction, and it's going to definitely inspire the next generation of filmmakers.
Yeah. Aside from the third act, though, I did want to talk a little bit about the like genre or tone of it and all, in general. Like there's it was kind of marketed as this like, oh, it's a home invasion alien movie, you know, and it certainly is. But like, I think the first act is where it's scary and the rest of it is more of just a sci-fi thriller, you know.
Yeah, it did dive into the horror stuff really quickly, which I liked.
Yeah.
When I realized it was going to be dialogue free, I was like, all right, let's buckle in. And then it like really got into like home invasion thriller quick. Like I think it's like minute like 10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're off to the races and it's like you've got a psychic alien that can move things with its mind. And it's all very well done and horrifying for like the first 30.
Yeah. And that whole sequence, that first, like those first 30 minutes, that first night is so well done. And like, it just made me feel confidence in him as a director, like moving forward. Like some of the sequences, like the way that they shot like the scares were really cool. Like the sequence where she's trying to hide under her bed and the alien's coming in, right? Or, and you see the weird feet in front of her. Like that was really cool. I really liked some of the sequences where like the camera is kind of like fixed in one place and you're like, your attention is drawn to like the door, for example, but then you kind of realize that the alien has been moving to the side almost that entire time that you've been fixated on the door, you know, like things like that, like is really, I thought were really well done and really cool. There is one specific scene, and this is later in the movie, actually after that first night, but there's the part where she's in the basement and she's like around the corner, like waiting for the alien, like to come around the corner, and something falls and she's like looking at it. But then you realize the alien's like squatted down, like right behind her, just kind of watching her reactions for like a little bit there. Like those shots were so cool and so creepy. Like that stuff was really, really well done, I thought.
No, completely agree. I know I referenced Signs. The other big alien invasion on a farm that this evokes is obviously Nope. And
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I thought of that too.
They do a really good job of that whole thing of like, you know, you spooky shit happens at night. And then during the day you try to like make sense of the spooky shit and then spooky shit happens at night. And like, that's just like a really great trope of like living on a farm, living in a desolate area, you know, like me and you, like we, like our hometown was pretty small and like desolate in parts. And it's very easy to like get a spooky vibe if you want. So that was cool to see executed so well here. And then, I gotta give big ups to the tractor beam. That shit was the MVP of the movie for me. I know we're gonna talk about the aliens and the effects and everything like that, so I just want to give a moment to that amazing use of tractor beam in this shit. Like for me, what was really cool was like the crop circles that don't look like crop circles. Like they look like coaster stains or like cup stains when you don't leave a coaster or a coaster under the under it, you know, like on a table. Yeah. And I thought that was so cool. I thought that, cause like at first I was just like, what is it? And then finally, like they kind of like clue you in and it's like, that's like the force of the tractor beam, like pushing down on like the outer ring of it. And that's such a cool update on crop circles. Mm-hmm. And then, like the fact that like, it's got like a lift feature, but also like a pulse pressure feature. And it also doesn't work on the aliens. And it's like the fact that we can just like talk about all the things a tractor beam can do in a movie where there was no dialogue. Like, it's just like you had to see it to get it. Like that was a really, really cool part of the movie for me.
Agreed. Yeah. That was really unique. Like a lot of the stuff with like the world building with regards to the alien stuff was really interesting. Obviously a lot of thought was put into that and that was really cool.
Yeah.
I think one thing that what that does is, as opposed to something like A Quiet Place, right? I mentioned that before, where like the aliens have invaded and they're like basically just feral animals, you know? Like, in this one, like it's clear that they are something intelligent that can fly a spaceship and come to you, you know? Like they're mean and some of them are animalistic, but there is like an intelligence there to that society.
Dude, that is a really good point. Yeah, like I feel like you always get that binary with like alien invaders where they're either just like berserker monsters, like attack the block or something, or the host, or I guess the host was like a mutant. But either way, like it's like they're either like berserker beasts or they're like civilized like invaders with like Star Trek villain of the week kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is a really good merger of that where it's just like, oh yeah, they're gonna fuck you up on two fronts.
Yeah, exactly. should we dig into the monster of it all?
Just one last time, tractor beam, so cool, you rock. I'm team tractor beam all day, every day, MVP 2023. Let's monster.
Hashtag team tractor beam.
Hashtag team tractor beam, guys. Let's get it trending.
Let's do it. Yeah. So the aliens he kind of refers to as the Greys, which are modeled after like the sketches that were done in like the 50s when abducted people would talk about like what their close encounters, you know, like those, that kind of classic alien look. So I'm going to call them the Greys as I'm moving forward. But so that's like the kind of like thought behind it. But anyway, the studios that did the creature effects was a combination of two. It's called DNEG VFX and Fuse VFX. There was some motion capture involved, especially with the more complex arm movements. But a lot of it was CGI and 3D modeling. And the exciting thing about this, and I think I may have mentioned this to you, Klee, but I don't know if I did. One of the senior creature modelers on this is a friend of the podcast, Mikkel Franzen.
What? Hey, yeah. Mikkel.
Yeah. So our buddy and a guy we interviewed in a couple podcast episodes ago and friend of the podcast, like I said, he had a big role in this as a senior creature modeler for particularly the large aliens. And he worked on the other ones as well. So kind of a fun little shout out to him there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, well done. Like truly the creature effects in this were like so fun. And, you know, obviously the grays are a very like well-trod territory in terms of like representation in movies and TV for us. But, you know, every time I see those little gray bastards show up again, I'm always excited. And like, I'm always intrigued to see like what the new spin on them is. And they did not disappoint with this one.
Agreed. And honestly, after that conversation we had with Mikkel, I've come to like, I know we've always been really like heavy and like, yeah, practical effects, which I still am. Like, I've come to appreciate the 3D like creature modeling a little bit more from that conversation. And like, knowing that kind of went into this, like, I was still like really impressed with the designs and the creature work that went into it. Like there is a lot of CGI out there that's really bad, but I think in general, this movie looked really good.
I mean, the fact that like we can point to CGI of like 20 years ago and say we love it, you know, like I don't think the problem has ever been anti-CGI or VFX. It's like, it's literally just like, like anti-effort, you know what I mean? Like really just understanding the environment that the creature is going to be in, how it interacts with the characters and the characters interact with it. Like all of that is just like, it's so much more pleasurable for an audience when it's like considered.
Yeah. And you can tell all that work was put in here for sure. And that care was put in there for sure.
Yeah. Cause there's crappy animatronics. Like it's not like, absolutely true. It's not like we're like 100% pro like animatronic either.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
With regards to like the creatures in universe. So Duffield said he kind of gave all the aliens names, came up with this whole culture for them that wasn't on screen. The sounds particularly, which I thought were really interesting, like the clicks and the howls they're all meant to mean things. Like he kind of gave he wanted them to sound weird and alien, but he wanted there to be kind of like a logic behind the sounds. So like he intentionally had some of the aliens like repeating the same click howl combos over and over again. So like, he is a quote that I have from an interview where he says, part of the terror is the character Bryn doesn't know what they're saying, but she knows that they're saying the same thing multiple times. And that being something you're just picking up, it's a language and there's music to it. It's not just growls and clicks and there's a process behind it. So like, apparently, according to Brian Duffield, he had like things in his mind that the aliens were specifically saying. So he would tell the people who were coming up with the sounds like, okay, this is what they're trying to say, like figure out to make that like sound something like this or whatever. So I don't even know what he's trying to say, but like there's some sort of like rhythm to it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I like that. And I like the idea that like the only characters with dialogue in this movie are aliens in a language we don't understand. I think that's a cool flex. Cause like, it's not really a silent film,
right?
It's just a foreign film.
It is. Yeah. When you put it that way, it is.
Yeah. That's kind of a cool little like flex that the movie has going for it. I liked it. And I did think that he didn't reinvent the wheel with any of this, but like it didn't make it any less entertaining, like just seeing the way he combined these tropes.
Yes. And one of the other piece that's interesting is like, so we have the gray, the typical grays, the ones that walk, and although they have weird feet, which was cool. The weird feet.
Don't feet shame.
I thought they were cool. I'm saying they're cool.
Okay. Well, you said weird.
Is weird inherently a negative thing to you, Khalid?
When you say it.
All right. Fair enough. Anyway, one thing that I was really intrigued about was the three different like versions of the aliens. Like we have the little like gremlin one and like the giant one that like runs at her in the graveyard or whatever and like directs the saucers. Like the I thought I was trying to figure out when I my research into this, I wanted to find out if there's like some sort of like evolution there or like what that was. And so I did find some information at that on that was kind of interesting. Apparently the production team had names for the three stages or the three different versions of the aliens. The one that walks, the more humanoid one, is the gray. The big one is called Daddy Long Legs, and the little gremlin ones, they just called Little Fucker.
He is a little fucker. That's a perfect name for him. As soon as I saw him, I was like, look at that little guy. He's just a troublemaker.
Right?
You know, so he's just up on that spaceship just like knocking shit over like a cat.
Yeah. He's like the cat of the aliens. Yeah, exactly.
So wait, did they clarify if like they're supposed to be different like stages of the gray?
Okay, so here I do have a quote here. One more thing I almost forgot to mention. The parasite is another piece to it. They have the parasite.
Yeah.
Piece. Yeah. Yeah. So then they actually wrote all those names as shorthand into the script too. So kind of fun. Like,
yeah, I feel like you'd have to, because like, yeah. Otherwise, how the hell do you write that? Like, the gray with long legs.
Yeah. Or the little fucker. Yeah.
The little fucker.
So the thought behind it initially, it was when he was conceiving the story that they wanted Bryn to kill the first gray early in the movie. And so they're kind of thinking like, what can we do to kind of keep the stakes up after killing one right away? And so they're like, let's introduce other iterations, keeping the fear and tension up, gets rid of that like thought of like, oh, she killed one, so we're like safe now, like she can do it again, making different challenges come her way. But anyway, here's the quote that I got that's kind of about like the different stages. I keep saying stages, but that's inaccurate. But he says, quote, I really like the idea that these guys aren't male or female. It's not like they come to Earth and it all breaks down the same. I like that they have more of a tiered system. I don't think it's gender specific either, but that it's a multi-species situation with different types of aliens all living in a harmonious way. Not like humans and pets, but just kind of like, you know, you have the gray, you have the little fuckers, you have the daddy long legs, and each has their own very specific role in the society that you'll never see. So
wait, so like they're all like adults of their version?
Essentially, yeah.
So it's like races, basically.
I guess kind of like races, but like different, also like subspecies or species of like something like that. You know, like it's like,
do they have equal rights?
I don't know. Like the connection I make in my head is almost like sometimes like sci-fi movies, like, if humans had like evolved alongside like lizard people, and we just have like two sentient races that are, or sapient races that are vastly different, but we all like occupy the same space, kind of thing.
Wait, say that again.
So like, I don't know. Have you, like, there's like sci-fi movies and things like where like there are multiple like races, like, yeah, like races, like if there was like humans like evolved from like apes and stuff, or like, but like humans that evolved from like lizard people, like we'd live all together, right? Like that's kind of what it is.
You said that way too casually the first time. Like that was just like a normal thing to consider.
It's a thing that I think about a lot.
Yeah, I bet. You said it casually enough. No, because you just said it and I was just like, yeah, sure. Wait, what? Yeah, like if like there was like a subsection of humans that evolved from lizards. No, that is Joe. You understand that, like, we barely coexist right now just based off different skin colors, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't just casually throw out that, like, now there's a subsection of us that are lizard people. And, like, yeah, that would be fine. We would figure it out.
No, I didn't say we'd figure it out. I'm just saying that's what's like.
I guess, but, like, you see how that's a way more complex thing than like just the way you said it.
Yes, I do.
Okay. I just want you really stopped me in my tracks, and I just want to make sure you know it's not on me.
Yeah. Listeners, it's not on Khalid.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll give you that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's a wild thing. Cause like, I'm gonna be honest, like, I feel like the little fuckers don't have as much rights as like the other two aliens in that world. And if they do, that's an interesting story. I want to know how they got those rights. Cause like,
right?
This seems like a very, as sophisticated as they are with space travel and telekinesis and stuff like that, I still feel like they're a very volatile species and very aggressive. And so it just doesn't make sense that like, you would give the same rights to the littlest ones that also are like assholes and don't have telekinesis, you know?
Right. And, you know, I'm just reading Brian Duffield's words there. But, like, yeah, I think that it seemed clear that the little ones were, like...
They were like
feral almost. Like, I feel like they were, like, I don't know, like fodder almost. Like, after she killed the first one, like, I feel like the other gray, like, sent the little one to be like, figure out what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's dangerous. You go in, you know?
I feel like if they're ever like in like a stranded after a plane crash kind of situation, they always eat the little fuckers first.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's just understood.
He did also. So this is a little bit separate, but he talks about the daddy long legs ones. They're the ones that kind of do those weird like hand motions, you know, like they pause and like kind of like twisty hand stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Remember that? Like he kind of like refers to them as like almost like a priest like figures. So like, he had like some sort of religious hierarchy in his head with the aliens. And I think like those ones sort of like making, I don't know, like religious gestures or something. And that was supposed to like indicate like, oh, like the ship comes here or something. I don't know. But like they're a cross between air traffic controllers and priests, I guess.
That's so weird. That's such a weird cross to do.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Like, I feel like the more you explain about the, like, the alien homeworld and the hierarchy, the less I understand. Like, I thought I had a grasp on it, and you just told me some of them are priests/air traffic controllers.
Well, you gotta save some mystery for the sequel.
I would pay so much money for a sequel that goes in depth with all of this. I hope they stand by all of this if they ever revisit this world.
Me too.
I want to say, though, the parasite thingy. So, like,
yeah.
I, for, like, half the movie, or at least, like, from when they were introduced as, like, a thing in the movie, half of that time, I was, like, kind of convinced that the twist was going to be that the aliens themselves are being possessed by these things.
That could have been interesting, yeah.
Because, like, it just was, like, it just felt like too many things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, They come down here and like they've got like a tractor beam that beats your ass. There's like a spider version. There's a little fucker version. One of them's like telekinetic, so like you really are just 9 times out of 10 fucked. And they like regurgitate like body controlling parasites. Like I thought that the twist was going to be that like the body controlling parasites were like they were like the invaders and they were just using these aliens.
That would have been a pretty cool twist, actually. I would have liked that.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean,
I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine that it's not that. Like, I think that it works, and like, what it might have complicated things even more for like what they were trying to say and do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I just it was an interesting concept, and I think that was also like something I had seen before, but was executed well.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying. You mean like the parasites you've seen it before?
Yeah, the whole use of like a parasite like body snatching you and stuff.
Yeah, I mean it's body snatchers, right? Invasion body snatchers, like that element. Okay, so yeah, you're right. I'm with you on that. That was an interesting element. I will say that the sequence where she gets the parasite put into her mouth was pretty horrifying. Hmm. It was really jarring at first when it started like gagging. And I feel like Nicole and I were both watching and we're like, what the hell is happening right now? Like, that was really strange. But ultimately, like when you see it like going into her mouth, like that's like scary. Not like scary, but like just like, ugh, I hate this, you know?
Here's my question now that we're on it.
Yeah.
So the whole big thing in like third-ish act or like early third, late second act is that the parasite thing gets in her throat.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically like sends her to like a mental like illusion that her friend Maude is still alive, has grown up and like forgives her and everything. And she rejects that and like yanks the thing out of her throat.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the third act, they basically offer her like the real version of that lie of like an entire town of people that like her again. It's just that they're all possessed.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just stay possessed yourself at that point? You know?
I don't know. I mean, she hadn't gone through the forgiveness process yet, I guess.
I don't know. It just feels like it's supposed to be like this like level of... Wait, you think like if she had forgiven herself? Is that what you're saying? If she had forgiven herself with Maude in the dream, she would have stayed?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm getting into the weeds about it, but like you just made me think of that. And like, it's like, it's interesting. And I feel like it's not a coincidence or whatever. I don't think it's like a redundancy. I think there's a point to it and I'm trying to make sense of it.
Well, I think that, I think you're right though. I think if she, but I think it's clear that she hadn't forgiven herself. So like when she saw Ahmad, she was like, I can't, this isn't real. I can't be here. You know? So like when she was up with the aliens at the, in the climax of the ending of the movie, she like has to go through that. I forgive my childhood self. And then she's like that weight lifted. And so like, I guess she's able to live in that fantasy land. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, it'd be like if Neo, like this is what it feels like. It feels like Neo got out of the Matrix. And then at the very end of the Matrix, he just like hung out. With, I guess he did do that in the in Matrix Revolutions. He did just hang out with the robots in real life.
Yeah, he did. Holy okay, shit. Well, here, I just had a thought.
They just Matrixed this shit.
Yeah, they did. That was a good connection, Khalid.
Not intentional.
I did have a thought just now that you made me think of. So like with the idea of like forgiving herself and allowing herself to live in the fantasy, what if at the end when she falls back to Earth and she feels happy, what if that was just the aliens realizing that they what they had to do to keep her possessed, and she actually is inside of her own head still?
That's just like a Brazil kind of ending.
That's true, but you know? That could be it.
Yeah, that's fine if that's what it is, but like I don't know, like
you like it better where it's real.
I do like it better where it's real because like, at least then it's like a, like more of a statement. Otherwise we just watch like a particularly like kind of fucked up person just like go through what seemingly the whole planet went through. And it like the big trick at the end is that the aliens like didn't let us know that they got them like that. Here's my thing. The assimilation for it to be an illusion is like, what's the point? Because like she in the illusion, she's giving in to the aliens.
Yeah.
If it was supposed to be an illusion for her benefit, it wouldn't be that she gives in to the aliens. Cause like, that's what's actually happening.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Also, I think I feel like the, yeah, no, I am with you on that one. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. But I mean, no, obviously I had kind of like an inkling of that at one point too. And then I was just like, I feel like that makes not as much sense and isn't as satisfying.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No, the ending works as is, or I don't know that it works. Like I still have my qualms with it, but like it makes more sense if this is actually what happened. And it's just like her and the aliens just have a weird relationship.
Yeah. I think, one of the scenes, I'm not 100% clear on the doppelganger element. Like it seemed like the people were.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
They were possessed by the parasites and they were able to like be controlled, but then like it seems like they were also making the doppelgangers of them. So like in the end, are those aren't possessed people, or are they're the doppelgangers, right? Or are they the possessed people?
I don't know what the point of that is, because if you have the doppelganger, why do you have to possess them that way?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, maybe that's how they get the schematics to possess. I don't know.
Schematics. Maybe that's how they get the schematics. No follow up.
No follow up. Like I do think like the scene where she meets her doppelganger and like has to kill the doppelganger is like a really touching sequence, because like it's like illustrative of the fact that like she hasn't had any human connection. So like even though this version of herself tries to kill her, it's like the only thing that's hugged her ever. And so she like feels really emotional and like about killing it. And also it's like killing yourself. Like that's a nice touching scene. And I almost feel like maybe the whole point of the doppelganger was like a writing backwards from that. I don't know. And that's just why the logic doesn't really quite work.
It felt like too many things. I'll be honest. it was just one too many things at the, cause like, again, like, I know that like even if there was dialogue, it might not satisfactorily explain a lot of this, but like you're leaving all of it up to us as the audience to try to suss out. And it's just like, if you're asking me, it was just too many things. You know, like I could not for two fucking seconds tell you what the aliens' game plan was, because they seemed really sloppy about this shit. And like like, what was the ultimate goal? Why is this girl the only one that is seemingly concerned about what is like a brazen alien invasion, like several days deep, you know? Like, this is a very confusing world. And I put a lot of the blame on the fact that like no one could just say what the fuck's happening.
Yeah. And I think, again, like I'm going to go back to it, and I'm trying not to criticize the director about this or Brian Duffield, but like I think it is like that first time being in charge of the whole movie, really, kind of thing, like directing and writing. Like there are some of those elements that probably would have been maybe taken out, you know. Like I think that he's trying to do a lot. There's a lot of inspirations in this movie. Like we talked about Signs, we talked about, I mean, even Close Encounters of the Third Kind a little bit, but also like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's like a lot of homages when you think about it. And it's like, you could maybe cut some of those, like you didn't need the doppelganger element or something, you know. I don't know. Maybe there's just like stuff that maybe he'll hone and fine tune as he continues on directing and writing.
See, cause yeah, that was one of, like, again, like nothing I saw in this movie was like new, but he was doing a lot of it in like a cool, effective way.
Yeah.
And then that just felt like I've seen better versions of it. Like Annihilation comes to mind. You know, that clone doppelganger scene is like haunting. It's beautiful. Oh,
that's really good. Yeah.
And it like, it really like fundamentally is like telling you something about the creature. And for this, it just felt like, I don't know. Like it felt like forced, I guess, you know, I don't know. Like what are these aliens doing to her? That is it the same as everybody else, or is it specific to her? Cause like, it's like, they're really just like, it felt like the aliens were directing this movie. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, and this is our lead for this invasion. And we're gonna really like, first, like our one guy is gonna like whip her around and she's gonna brain him with like a thing. And that's gonna be like foreshadowing to when we find out that she brained someone else when she was a kid. And you know what I mean? Like, it felt like if M. Night Shyamalan like was the alien in Signs. and he was like, yeah, man, like this family, this priest family with like the fucked up like back history, and like, oh yeah, like the mom, when she died, she said a bunch of weird shit. What if we got them to do like weird shit later in the movie so that it like it all comes back around? Like, that's what it feels like. It feels like that, like I'm not as moved by a lot of like what the girl goes through, because it feels like the aliens are like kind of corralling her to do it.
Are you saying you also feel that about Signs?
No, I'm saying that Signs wouldn't like have been as powerful if it felt like the aliens were like retroactively trying to make the words of the dead wife like make sense.
I feel like you made the case that that's what they're doing now.
Did I make that case?
Kinda.
I don't think they did. I don't think they did. They know about it?
I don't know.
No, I'm saying that would have been a dumb movie if like felt like the aliens were like trying to contrive a story.
Okay, I see.
And that whole her seeing herself and like everything about it, like it just felt so nail on the head to me. Like,
yeah,
the movie didn't need it.
Kind of like, I feel like I may have made this point when we were talking about Prometheus back several episodes ago, that there was like movies can be like story in service of like the metaphor or the allegory, or like or when they work together in tandem, and it's possible like the metaphor or the allegory, like the theme, was like taken precedent over like the story in that case.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, like that's the wrestling match of like a writer in when you're doing genre, especially where it's like at some point, like, it's more metaphorical than it is literal. And like, you don't want to get into the weeds with like certain parts of it, because like, it just kind of spoils the fun of like the idea that you're trying to convey. But that being said, like, I feel like my criticism here is like, you had a lot of stuff that worked. Like it felt like you kind of confused things with this addition. It's not even that I'm criticizing you for adding it. I just feel like it took away from like a lot of other cool things that these aliens were doing. And it makes it just feel like, I don't know. And that's just me. That's just one humble viewer's opinion.
Yeah. I wanted to circle a little bit back to something you said earlier, and wanted to say, speaking of braining things, Khalid.
I said that like 17 times.
Would you fight or would you flirt with these aliens?
Thank you for asking, Joe. Normally, I don't look. Well, first of all, if this is your first time listening, Fight or Flirt is a segment that sounds exactly like what it is. I talk about the monster in question and whether or not, if I was in that situation, if I would fight or flirt with the creature.
Hey, Khalid.
Yeah.
Is it really? Does it really sound exactly like what it is?
Yeah, I think so. When you hear fight or flirt, what do you think?
I don't know what I think.
Would you fight with it or flirt with it?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's maybe, literally Khalid. The whole segment.
Yeah. But yeah. You say that and then you explain it.
Yeah. Should I not?
No, you should.
Yeah. I don't, what are you criticizing right now? I say this like every time. Are you just realizing it?
No, I think about it every time. I think about it every time.
Yeah, it sounds like what it is.
Kind of.
That's why I elaborate. Because sometimes I get, that's still not enough.
Right? Exactly.
I hate you so goddamn much. Like, you're like, this is like a gotcha moment, but like, you clearly agree that like, I'm doing a good job of like elaborating, even though it sounds like what it is.
Yeah, Khalid, you're doing great.
I hate you.
Love you.
All right. All right. Anyways, Fight or Flirt, the Grays. I think we can just bundle them all up together. I would absolutely fight all of them. Because I don't know, it seems like if you don't have like a really fucked up backstory, like the chances of them just giving you a town full of like zombies isn't great. I don't know that they're offering that deal to a lot of people on Earth. And, you know, they show a lot of saucers in the sky at the end. So maybe it's like a pilot program and they're going to roll it out in like sociopaths and like, or psychopaths. I don't want to say she's a sociopath because she definitely was like reacting to things. Psychopaths. Or murderers, childhood murderers, get their own town in this alien utopia. I don't know. Spoiler alert for anybody who doesn't know my backstory, I didn't murder anybody as a kid. So I don't think I would get this deal. And even if I did, it doesn't sound like a good deal. Like, it's just like a bunch of like rigid alien clones that for some reason still are piloted by like body snatcher scorpions in their throat. Like, none of that sounds great. I feel like I'm a witty guy and a lot of like my appeal in a partner and in like friends, you know, surroundings is like people who understand me and my witticisms and my like just like little gems, you know. That's why I keep you around, Joe. If you just turned into like a nonverbal like alien monster thing, I just feel like we wouldn't have as much to talk about. I hate you. Anyways, yeah, like it's just, it didn't look like a fun ride with them, you know, like they're just very much like just talking shit about her clearly while she's in the room, but using their language, which like, you know, my mom speaks a different language. I know what that's about. I know what that's like. I've seen it happen. It's happened to me and it's not a great feeling. I can't imagine a world where I'm dating one of these guys and I'm just sitting there like, ha ha, as they like clickety clack at each other, just knowing they're saying something about my pants. So it's a clear cut fight. Also, just Daddy Long Legs, like on a just practicality level, he might as well be a kaiju. Like I'm not gonna entertain a height differential like that. And then for the little fucker, like, yeah, like I already have a cat. I'm not gonna flirt with one. I know that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all that's right. That's mine.
I like it.
That's mine.
I like it.
Yeah. Sounds what about good. You? Would you fight or flirt with them?
Fight. Yeah, I would fight as well.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and these guys are very killable.
I was going to say, they don't seem too hard to fight. I mean, the telekinesis bit, but...
The telekinesis thing is kind of scary, but like, again, like, Caitlin Dever is like 5'4 and like 120 pounds wet, you know? Like, she is a tiny girl. And so like, I'm just like... I don't know. Like, what if you went to literally any other farm that definitely has guns and like tried that shit? You know? Like, try that in a small town, you know? Like,
oh, God.
They did, obviously, based on the movie, try that in a small town and succeed. So I don't know what I mean by that. But like, also, they did not show us what they would do against people with like weapons or like, you know, the full weight of like a militarized like complex.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel like maybe they have stopgaps for that, and that tractor beam looks like it does a lot of fucking damage. So like, I'm not even saying that like it's like, oh, America, fuck yeah. Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't know. We've got like predator drones and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If there's one thing we're good at, it's like fighting. So yeah. I would, that's an interesting matchup.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. I think it's interesting that you bring that up too, because like, I feel like a lot of these movies, like we've been bringing up like Signs and Quiet Place and stuff, like they don't bring up like how like the military really handles this, you know, like wars.
They kind of do in Signs.
Kind of.
Like they show all the footage of like, and you know, it's like the funny thing there is like how like water ends up kicking their ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Know? Which like, I don't know. I feel like this day and age with like information spreading so fast, like we'd see like 7 TikToks by like lunch. Like, yeah, guys, it's fine. Water gets them.
Right. Kind of want to see that movie.
It'd be like the water challenge by like day 2. People just like finding like new pranky ways to like get the aliens drenched.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. That seems fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun world I just envisioned.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Should we do our final segment?
Let's do it.
All right. Our final segment of the podcast is our What the Fandom segment, in which we share a couple things that we're into at the moment. May or may not have anything to do with monsters, may or may not have anything to do with the movie we're talking about at all. So I'll let you start this week, Khalid. What the Fandom with you?
Thank you, Joe. My What the Fandom this week is going to be kind of a wasted one because it's like a very popular movie that's out right now, but I just saw it and I'm really chewing on it. Killers of the Flower Moon by Martin Scorsese. You know, it's like, you know, for what is arguably like the defining like filmmaker of America's like late 20th century and early 20th century. A guy who has like as many hits as he does to come out with a movie like that's like so provocative and so exposed in like the way that it's talking about like just a level of like crime and injustice that isn't usually given this kind of like platform in the mainstream, and to do it in such a like humane and like thoughtful way, like it really just like, it was like a gut punch watching it. And it was the kind of thing of like, you know, you've seen Scorsese like show bad people in the past. And like the trick he usually pulls on you is like, he shows the fun times, you know? And it's like, there's none of that in this movie. You know, like nobody's ever like, yeah, you remember the good old days of like the beginning of this enterprise? It was just fundamentally just like an evil, nasty thing from the beginning. And he doesn't pretend it was anything else, and he just does such a great job with like characterizing it and like not necessarily like moralizing it himself so much as just like showing history for what it was. And yeah, I'm always in awe of like the trick he pulls of like, everybody else is like showing you evil as like this sneering, mean like person, and he just shows it as like, I don't know, evil is not necessarily the goal of these people. Like greed, like whatever you want to call it, is the goal. And like the fact that it's evil is just like kind of just like a side effect to them. And that's like so much scarier to like people who have like seen like the victimization of all of that. But I say all that to say, it's a long movie, but it's a powerful movie and it's such a great watch. He's top of his game even now at his like big age. And yeah, if you're a fan of Scorsese, like you gotta see this, and seeing it in theaters is like really just it adds to the experience. So Killers of the Flower Moon, that's gonna be my What the Fandom this week. Joe, What the Fandom with you?
Thanks for asking, Clee. That's a heavy one, huh?
Yeah, it's heavy. And like, you know, I'm like doing like a very special episode of Frankenstein's. No, like it's still good, but like, I don't know, like you're not, it's, trust me, like if you're going there for like a Wolf of Wall Street's Goodfellas type ride, you're not going to get it. but that doesn't mean you shouldn't watch it.
Yeah. I'm very eager to check that one out for sure.
Yeah.
Don't know when I'm going to be able to make it to see it, but very curious. Yeah. I want to see it for sure.
Very, very good.
All right. So my fandom this week, I'm going to talk about a book that I started. I'm about a little over halfway through it. It's called The Worm and His Kings by Hayley Piper. It's, I think it would be considered a novella because it's a relatively shorter book, but it's a cosmic horror tale, relatively fast paced, but it's about a woman who lost her lover, who's a older woman, and to this kind of like unknown place that's like a, it's like, if you know, cosmic horror, like basically like kind of like a unnatural off place, right? So she follows a monster underneath this, like the streets of New York City, into this kind of like place where like a cult worships this creature called the Worm, and has to go into those even deeper into these layers of like subterranean layers that get into places that shouldn't exist by all accounts, from like how like the physics of Earth should think about it, you know, how that works. So like it gets increasingly creepier in that sense, like this isn't right, this doesn't work, how is this happening, this isn't part of our reality in a sense. So like that's like that, the cosmic horror element of it too. So she's on this kind of journey to like find her her girlfriend, but encounters lots of weird, creepy, scary things along the way. And if you're into like cosmic horror, which is something I really like, or like the notion of characters leaving like a comfortable reality to a place that is like very uncomfortable and off-putting, strange, otherworldly, kind of like Annihilation.
We're not talking about the DMV.
We're not talking about the DMV. Yeah.
Ha-cha-cha.
Nice, Khalid. Anyway, that's kind of the vibe here. So I really like it. I am almost done with it, and there's a sequel, so I'm excited to tear into that one too. So that is my first fandom. I have a second one actually, Khalid.
Wow.
And this one is one that I know that doesn't really need a shout out, but I just wanted to give a shout out because I just finished it last night. But I finished season 4 of Star Trek Lower Decks, the last 2 episodes. The season wrapped it up, and I really, really enjoyed the season. I really enjoyed the final 2 episodes. It was a 2-parter. Just really excited for Star Trek, the state of it in general, and some of the things that they're doing and that they're pulling off with that show in particular and their other shows. And I'm looking forward to when Lower Decks is back and when we have more new Star Trek to watch. Those are my 2 fandoms.
No, I co-signed that Lower Decks recommendation. That new season slaps. They are firing on all cylinders. I feel like we say it every season, but man, like they are hitting a groove of like animated, like just like joyful comedy that like I feel like we don't see as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's just like really fun sci-fi. So yeah, great recommendations all around.
Thank you, Clayton.
Yeah. And with that, that is another fun episode of Frankenstein's podcast. Please remember to review and rate us 5 stars wherever you listen. And until next time, creep it easy.